Area Toll Authority for Wednesday, October 22nd. Please like to request that the speaker, the secretary, call the roll, please.
Good morning, commissioners. Chair Worth?
Here.
Vice Chair Cortesi?
Here.
Commissioner Aguirre?
Here.
Commissioner Asombrado?
Here.
Commissioner Bates?
Here.
Commissioner Campos?
Present.
Commissioner Dodd?
Here.
Commissioner Giacopini?
Here.
Commissioner Glover? Commissioner Haggerty?
Here.
Commissioner Halstead?
Here.
Commissioner Kinsey?
Here.
Commissioner Licardo?
Present.
Commissioner Luz?
Here.
Commissioner McKenzie?
Present.
Commissioner Persinski?
Here.
Commissioner Kwan? Commissioner Sartipi? Commissioner Spearing? Commissioner TCA?
Here.
Commissioner Winner?
Present.
We have a quorum.
Thank you very much. I'd like to welcome you all to the meeting and invite you to join together in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Now I'd like to turn back to the authority secretary to ask for the reading of the compensation announcement.
As authorized by state law, I'm making the following announcement. Each member of the board here today will be entitled to receive $100 per meeting attended, up to a maximum of $500 per month per agency. This amount is provided as a result of convening a meeting for which each member is entitled to collect such amount.
Thank you very much. I'd like to announce that our meeting is broadcast on the MTC website and invite the public to comment. We look forward to your comments on any items and matters before the authority today. If you'd like to make a comment, please fill out one of the blue speaker cards that's on the table next to the windows, along with all the materials for today's meetings. So, and also as you come to the podium, or commission members, if you might be able to identify yourselves, we can make sure that we have all the recording information. Moving on to a chair's report, I have no comment for the chair's report. Our next item is the consent calendar.
Move the consent.
Consent calendar is moved by Commissioner Dodd, seconded by Commissioner Spearing. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposition? The consent calendar is adopted unanimously. Next item, we'll move to item six, which is resolution number 114, fiscal year 2013-14 financing plan. And I'd like to turn that over to Brian Mayhew for that report, please. Thank you.
Thank you, and good morning, commissioners. We're here to ask you to authorize resolution 114. Which will basically be the last piece of the planned structured financings for the BATA projects, roughly $12 billion worth, that started in 2001. Over that time, we have a fixed-rate portfolio that has a blended yield now of about 4.40, and we hope to do a little better with it as we complete these last touches, and a weighted average portfolio just north of a little about 4.10. So over 15 years and all the drama and recessions and their liquidity crisis, we've hung on pretty well. Resolution 114 is sort of a follow-up to Resolution 110, which was approved last year in November 13 of 2013. That will authorize us to do $500 million worth of potential project financings, as well as authorize the refinancing of existing fixed-rate bonds, provided you achieve 3% net present value gain, or you have other business purposes for doing it, and that requires a certification. Myself, the chief executive officer, and the financial advisor. As we went out for 2014, we were relatively in good shape. We did $200 million worth of the project financings and did that at a relatively good rate. We also refinanced $1 billion worth of the 08 and 09 fixed rate bonds. Now, in doing that, we used a structure called a put. It's a fixed rate bond to a certain point in time. And at that point in time, the generated savings between now and that point of the call is about $158 million, or $146 million present value. What happens after that call date, though, is the bonds will become variable. We will put them into the normal variable rate mode. We are making some – these bonds were originally variable when we started. They're going to go back to being that when we're done. Our plan then is it's a sort of an asset liability match. And what it does is it, you have an asset portfolio of about $1 billion in BATA. You take the variable rate portfolio, the two offset each other, and you take that much money, or roughly $50, $60 million a year, off the toll payer's back, and we put it here. So that worked out pretty well for us. What we're going to do now is under 114, we're going to do the last of the $500 million. We have $300 million remaining. Should be relatively standard fixed rate bonds. One twist is we are looking for what's called a stepped coupon for a small part of it, roughly $50 million. A stepped coupon is literally that. It's a step up in interest rates. It allows us some flexibility in the earlier maturities where the market is very cost-effective right now. So it's something we're going to look at as we go and talk to investors. If there's no interest in it or there's not a good market for it, it's not better than the fixed-rate bonds, we'll just put it aside. The last piece will be we have about $450 million remaining in the 09s that are fixed rate. Their average interest rate about 5, 10, somewhere in that neighborhood. The economics are such right now with the market that is we can take those out with the same fixed put rate structure we used before. The savings, it's only a third, half size. The savings will be about $50 million. Cash flow through 19, present value about 46. Well within the targets for the present value savings. But again, because we can't promise what those savings will be after, and we have plenty of modeling and we benchmarks the things up and down, but we can't promise anything after that, and we want them to be variable rate after that. So rather than make any promises, the $50 million is what we're going to gain in cash flow. We know that piece. One other piece we're looking at on that final one, and that is whether some component of that should just go straight variable right now. Variable rates right now are, I mean, I think Susan's portfolio, I think it's 2 or 3 basis points, so that's 0.03%. It's so very low right now, and with some indications from the Federal Reserve that they intend to keep rates very low for some extended period of time, it is tempting to look at whether we should just take some extra savings and do that component, do a component of this, just go right in on a variable rate basis. You sacrifice the guaranteed savings. On the other hand, you may gain more. It's kind of a hedge. Anyway, we're looking at those two pieces. As far as the resolution is concerned, no changes in what we've asked for in authorization, just remaining $300 million. The cap on the interest rate is 5.75%. Terms 40 years, underwriter's discount is limited to 1% of principal, and all other expenses at half of that. On the refunding, same rules as always apply to us, 3% net present value, which we would get in the cash flow, but since we can't guarantee it for 40 years, there are other incentives and initiatives that achieve the other goals to be achieved, such as significant cash flow savings and then ultimately lower long-term debt service. Those are the do's and don'ts. I'm happy to answer any questions, and I hope you approve the resolution.
Thank you very much, Brian. First of all, I'd like to turn to the commission for any questions that we might have. Commissioner Kinsey.
Thank you, Brian. Long road here, coming to an end on an important project. Two questions. One, you talked about a $50 million cash flow benefit. Talk a little bit about where that actually goes back into our funding. And then the second question had to do with the refinancing. You said that there was an opportunity to identify projects of special importance, and you identified a committee that would be making that decision, yourself, our executive director. Could you restate what that means and give us an example of the kind of a thing that would qualify?
Well, on the first one, relatively easy. I'm not completely certain about the second one. The first question is literally cash flow. I mean, it's the same as refinancing your mortgage. You get it in your pocket, you do with it as you will. In our line of work, it simply falls into fund balance until the boss asks you to reprogram it into something else. Your restriction there, it has to be an eligible for bridge tolls. On the second, I don't know what future projects we would have in store. I mean, you know that we've been working on a number of them. Certainly the couple that have come in to funding that we have been working literally pulling out of the models, you know, between the project savings and the debt service savings, have been the express lanes and the grant program. Mm-hmm. Aside from that, when you phase projects, literally your limitation is they have to be eligible toll projects in the future. That's pretty much your limit.
Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Bates.
So, Brian, I'm sorry, I'm trying to understand. I'm a little confused why we'd want to go variable, you know, put money into variable rates when it seems like the fixed rates are so low now that they're probably never going to be this low, or the probable of them being this low again is unlikely. So wouldn't it be better to go instead of gambling with fixed, even though gambling with variables when, you know, who knows, you could get a big hit, but if you have a fixed, you could be better off in the long run.
Well, you're absolutely right. Interest rates are incredibly and attractively low right at the moment. Of course, last year they were 5.80. This year, long-dated bonds are sub-4 right at the moment. So you're absolutely right, and we do want to take advantage of that market as much as we can. There is a component of a portfolio where you're matching up basically what you can afford with the variable structure. And so what we do is we have a piece of it. It'll wind up being roughly 20% in total, 25% in total. That piece is matched up against our bank account. So as we earn money in our bank book, and which roughly we have a what we call a reserve structure of very basic components of $1 billion. That $1 billion earns at a taxable rate. What we do is we take that $1 billion and we use that against the tax exempt rate on roughly $1 billion to $1.5 billion, which is economics indicate that $1 billion taxable can pay off an equal amount or a greater amount of tax-exempt debt. So if you keep this relatively short, which we do our portfolio, and this is short, it resets on a weekly or monthly basis, these two will tend to offset each other. And once those offset each other, then you leave the rest of your debt portfolio, the fixed-rate portfolio, is left to the toll payers. It's a way of actually taking some of the pressure off of the tolls. And since we're required to maintain a level of liquidity we have, because otherwise you wouldn't have this much in the way of debt. You'd have higher tolls. So because we're required to maintain the liquidity, it's best to use your bank account here to pay off this much of your debt. These take care of each other. That leaves you the balance. And again, the mathematics are very simple. It takes about $1 is about $1.5 billion to $2 billion in projects. And we've got roughly $12 billion in projects on the books. So this is just one way of keeping your tolls down and still keeping the AA rating that we have. But you're absolutely right. It is something that we waited until the very end to make sure that the market and the different things that go with variable rate debt are all in place and we're very comfortable and secure we're not going to hit an 09 situation.
Great. Well, thank you very much. Yes, Commissioner Dodd.
So presumably, this debt, this is going out. How many more years are we going to be having this conversation, would you expect?
Well, 40.
Okay. So I guess the thing is I'm interested in understanding what the elasticity is of, I mean, obviously, we can't, right now you're feeling very good about short, you know, the short-term rates and variable rates and how they're going to be down. What I'd like to do is be thinking out 10 years or 15 years and what would happen if all of a sudden the rates, went up significantly. And, you know, maybe you could do some sort of spreadsheet on that. What would that mean to the ratepayers? And if we could have locked it in now for a little bit more and taken that risk out of the game.
Well, you're absolutely right, and we can do the analytics on it, but the basic theory is very simple. If the rate on your floating rate debt goes up, the rate on your asset side is going up as well. They won't move in lockstep. Can't guarantee that. In fact, we passed 8% interest rates in 08, remember, when things spiked up. Earnings on our portfolio also began to match it. So that's what the theory is. In the general market, and again, there's no prediction of what a liquidity meltdown would be again in 08, but in a general market, over time, averages, everything comes back to the average, and what happens is these will move. They may not move today. This one may spike, and this one moves later, but they will generally move in lockstep. So as you earn, you pay, say, 3% on your variable rate debt, your portfolio probably goes to 3.10 or 3.11.
Great. Well, thank you very much. And then with that, if there's no further comments, may I please have a motion to adopt resolution number 114 for fiscal year 2013-14 financing plan?
So moved.
Moved by Commissioner Pruszynski, seconded by Commissioner Geary. I have no public speaker cards to comment on this item. Therefore, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposition? That motion carries unanimously. Thank you very much. Our next item for public comment, I have one speaker card, Ken Bukowski.
Morning, Commissioners. I just want to mention a new webpage. It's regional-video.com. And if you go to the webpage, the first thing you see is the latest video, so you don't have to look for anything. It's right there. And the other thing I want to say is this is the only meeting I go to where I hear a compensation announcement. I don't hear it at any other meeting. So I don't know if you guys are just being nice about it or whether other people aren't complying, but just interesting. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Open and transparent meetings here. Okay, our next item, we will adjourn to our next meeting. And I'd like to please note for everyone's calendars the date and time change because of Thanksgiving holiday. So we will adjourn our meeting until Wednesday, November 19th at 1:30 p.m. in the afternoon. So thank you very much. Our meeting of the Bay Area Toll Authority is adjourned. Thank you very much. Good morning, everybody. I'd like to call to order a meeting of the Metropolitan Transportation Committee Commission for Wednesday, October 22nd. First of all, I'd like to turn to our commission secretary and confirm that we have a quorum.
Confirming quorum.
Thank you very much. Next, in terms of chair's report, I have a couple of things that I'd like to share with you all. First of all, as you know, we started this meeting at 10:45 because we had our biennial awards ceremony this morning, Excellence in Motion, and I want to thank everybody who was able to be there today and present the awards. It was really an exciting and exceptional award ceremony. People who are working throughout the Bay Area, both as staff and volunteers, legislative leaders, retired legislative leaders, community members, people who work so hard in so many different areas of transportation. And after the ceremony, Commissioner Pruszynski and I were commenting about what an amazing diversity in terms of geography, in terms of the types of transportation programs and projects that people are devoted to, and it was really inspiring. First of all, I really want to thank our staff. I thank the staff in general at the meeting earlier, but I particularly want to thank Pam Grove and Catalina Alvarado. Are they here today? You guys deserve, they deserve a huge thank you. You know, they presented this program, not only worked so hard to develop the nomination portfolio and plan the videos and the logistics for this event, and everything turned out absolutely flawlessly, and everybody honored was absolutely thrilled, and particularly Mary King. Mary King was so honored to be recognized by the commission for her leadership as chair of the design committee for the Bay Bridge. And you know, as you know, for all the discussions had begun about the Bay Bridge, everybody agrees it's absolutely gorgeous. And she was really thrilled to be honored. She received a standing ovation. Many people who had worked with her over the years were there, including Larry Doms, our former executive director, and Henry Gardner, who had been certainly president, head of ABAG, but also the Oakland city manager, city administrator. And so there were a lot of people there to celebrate with her, and it was particularly moving. Commissioner Haggerty, he was almost moved to tears because it was so moving to be able to recognize her, and her remarks were just really wonderful. So thank you to everybody, all the commissioners and staff who participated in the event, and particularly those of you who worked hard to identify volunteers and projects and programs to honor this year. It was really, really special. So with that, I'll move on to an item of business. Upon the recommendation of staff, the chair would like to appoint an audit committee to be comprised of the commission chair and chairs of the BATA Oversight Committee, the MTC Operations Committee, and MTC Administrations Committee. You can see that there's a staff report on that item. So if anybody first has any questions. If not, may I please have a motion to adopt, made by Commissioner Weiner and seconded by Commissioner Kinsey. Any public comment? Therefore, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposition? That motion carries unanimously. Thank you very much. We will now move on to a meeting of the Policy Advisory Council. And welcome Kathleen Baker to the podium. Thank you.
Good morning, Chairworth and Commission, and thank you for hosting this morning's awards. It is nice to see recognition of a lot of the work that's going on every day, from like very small to really grand scale. So, and congratulations to our own Naomi Armenta of the Policy Advisory Council. So reporting on the October 8th meeting of the Advisory Council, we started off with an overview of the public participation plan, which is entering its public comment process. And I think really one of the gists of our discussion there was to continue engagement with diverse stakeholders, non-traditional stakeholders, and also take advantage of the current update of the SCS RTP being a more limited update to continue really robust engagement, even if we're not dealing with as broad of a scope of issues. Issues like the housing issue this time around could be a really good opportunity for having some productive discussions in each of the communities. We then moved on to an update of the cap and trade funding framework and really appreciated the programming and allocations staff walk across to help the council understand how the state's framework really set where it aligns and doesn't align with the MTC framework. We understand that the initial opportunity for shaping that at the state level has really passed, but we're committed to having, when it comes around again and there's more opportunities to refine the guidance, we'd really like to still emphasize the Bay Area's case for defining disadvantaged communities. And then lastly, ahead of receiving the legislative platform in November, we had our own legislative brainstorming session. And as you probably can guess, a lot of what came out of that was looking for new sources of revenue. Some of what floated to the top from the groups were a VMT tax, looking also at an extraction tax, although that's still more nebulous, and then really moving on into some state guidance around zoning to support things now that redevelopment is gone, really looking at enterprise zones, new tax increment financing structures to allow the actual implementation of some of the development that needs to go on. Also, what rose to the top were sustainable funding sources for mobility management as our communities age, and also better enforcement and management. We realize this goes on a local level more so, but better enforcement and management of disabled placard abuse. There's some opportunities maybe to partner with the DMV and law enforcement in moving something like that forward. And then moving on to bike issues, we really wanted to see an emphasis maybe this year moving through with the Department of Education and the DMV, bike education and better bike education on the part of drivers and on the part of future cyclists as we try to move towards a more multimodal region. Those were really the kind of big ones for now, and we're going to hash out that list a little bit more in November and have more to report. So thank you.
Great. Kathleen, thank you very much for your presentation and your
thank
leadership.
You.
Appreciate it. Before we turn to the executive director's report, I'd like to just go back to the chair's report and highlight and just wanted to request that the commissioners that were appointed to serve on the audit committee, Commissioner Dodd, Mackenzie Tissier, and myself, just wanted to note that our meeting will be held on November 12th. Recognizing that you were just appointed a few minutes ago, if you might be able to check your calendars and confirm that we can have that meeting then. Second of all, and this is sort of pointed, it's amazing how fast 4 years go, but the current term of office for all MTC commissioners will conclude after February 9th, 2015. So the commissioner's secretary, Rosie, has recently mailed out letters to all of your respecting nominating and or appointing bodies requesting that they make their MTC commissioner appointments in time for the start of the next four-year commission term beginning February 10th, 2015. So for those of you who would like to be reappointed for another four-year term, now is the time to notify your appointing bodies and indicate your interest in serving. And so please don't hesitate to call Rosie or MTC General Counsel Adrian Wheel if you have any questions about timing of the process. So with that, then, I will turn now to our Deputy Executive Director for the monthly report.
Good morning, Commissioners. Andrew Vermeer, Deputy Executive Director. In light of Steve's absence, Alex and I made an executive decision to spare you of the Executive Director's report. But I would like to make one announcement regarding our Fast Track Customer Service Center. As you know, for the last year plus, we've been sort of in a confusing place of managing an old contract while we transition to a new contract that you all approved. In simple terms, what the Xerox contract is doing is moving really to a new operating system where they're putting a much more modern system in place that should improve customer service and tie the phone service and the web service and a lot of the work that they do in terms of customer involvement to a more modern system. Well, we're there now. And what that requires, though, is over the weekend of Halloween, starting Friday afternoon about 5:30 through Tuesday morning, the customer service center will close while it does this upgrade. And then hopefully on November 4th, when they open up Tuesday morning, we'll be in a much better place to really not only address customer service and make some improvements that we've been asking you to be patient for, but we also move into the new contract structure, which gives us an opportunity to provide more incentive, I'll say, in issuing penalties if they're not meeting their customer performance indicators. So there's a little bit of a transition time for that warm-up to the new system, but we do anticipate starting that first Tuesday in November that we'll be providing some better service opportunities for the customers. So that's the report. I'd be happy to answer any questions on that. I know it's been of interest for a while, or just move on.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Andy, are there any questions? All right. Well, we will look forward to a prosperous trick-or-treat with Fast Track after that holiday weekend. So thank you. Thank you very much for your hard work on all that. Are there any commissioner comments? Yes, Commissioner Kinsey.
Thank you. Two things. One, to share with fellow commissioners and the public that Chair Worth and I have been working with the staff and Caltrans on public access issues on the Richmond-San Rafael Bridge. And I wanted to thank the staff. We have brought on consultants for really tackling a really challenging issue that has a lot of the what could we do so that every day feels like a Columbus Day promise in it, but it also has all of the bureaucratic and environmental and permitting challenges you could ever imagine. And I did want to just acknowledge that our intention is to work closely with Caltrans staff here in District 4 and then take our thinking to the Secretary later this fall. And I think what it illustrates to me is that the system still needs pressure from the top to recognize what it takes to expedite projects. And we talked in our workshop earlier this year about wanting to find ways to solve these congestion problems more quickly. It's going to take executive leadership now, but we're trying to set a pattern of how we can do it for the region. So I did want to bring that to your attention. The other thing was a question, actually, to those in place of Steve for today, and that is, do we have an estimate of the cost or the risk for our transportation infrastructure based on the sea level rise expectations? Have we converted that into a sense of what it's going to take us as a region to deal with these consequences around the bay? And if not, how are we going to get to that?
Alex Bachelman, Deputy Executive Director for Policy. I think the short answer to your question is no, we have not yet done a full assessment of what that would take, but we are doing some work on that. in concert through an FHWA grant that we've gotten. We're looking at the types of projects that might be needed in certain areas. We've done, there's been some work done in Alameda County. But again, it's looking at the types of projects, and then there's some costs associated with those. But certainly that could be something, or the idea is that that could be translated into something you can do throughout the region. But we're definitely still in very much the early stages of that work. And I think that will be something that we'll be talking about as we start discussions on the next Plan Bay Area. I think that's one of the focus areas. Maybe not having the cost that you're looking for, but at least talking about how we address sea level rise.
Great. Thank you very much. Commissioner McKenzie?
Yeah, I'm pleased that Commissioner Haggerty has his ducks in a row
right
now.
Perfect timing talking about sea level rise, right?
No. We're not talking no sea level rise. We're talking Railvolution. And I was accompanied to that excellent conference by Commissioner Haggerty and Commissioner Glover, and we were shepherded by Planning Director Kirky. And those of you who have been on field trips with Kirky know that he looks after you and, you know, points you in the right direction. It was interesting to me for two reasons. One was to ride on their new Green Line light rail going from downtown Minneapolis to downtown St. Paul. It opened about 6 months ago. They have already reached their 2035 projected ridership in the first 6 months. It's an amazing success story. And the thing that I particularly noted was they had very skillfully routed it right through the middle off the University of Minnesota campus, which is one of these very large Midwestern campuses that you all know and love. The land-grant institutions of the Midwest are huge. And here is light rail running right through the middle of it. That happens to be where the old University Avenue ran. So no big surprise. They smartly ran the light rail right through the middle of it. And it's been used massively. You could see students come out off the lecture halls, the labs, and actually get on the train and go to their next destination or where they're living, or down to the pubs next to the football stadium, which also seems to be a destination. So that's number one. The second thing was we did have a chance to meet with commissioners from the Metropolitan Organization of the, I can never remember if it's 5-county or 9-county area. Can you remember, Scott, how many counties there were? Anyway, they're the ones who run the systems there. This was, I believe, the first actual regional governance structure in the United States which actually ran things as well as talked about things. The interesting part to me was they're all appointed by the governor. So when the governorship changes, gosh, the commissioners all change. I think the last time that happened, there was one out of about 15 survived. So as we study governance structures in the years to come, it was interesting to be exposed to the Minneapolis-St. Paul model. And I enjoyed my Railvolution. Thank you all.
Yes, Commissioner Haggerty.
Jake, very great, very good report. The one thing you missed was that they had to put the Green Line back on the track before the day before we got there.
I love it.
Fortunately, I missed that.
That's great. Thank you. Commissioner Geary?
Yes, I'd like to report that by recommendation of Commissioner McKenzie, I was able to be on a panel for the Local Government Commission at the beginning of the month, and representing not only this commission but also the county where I'm coming from. And it was an update on the Plan Bay Area on what things we've done right, what things we would change, especially as far as PDAs. In the communities that I serve. And so it was very interesting. I want to thank Commissioner McKenzie for recommending me.
Thank you very much. Commissioner Bates.
Thank you. So recently I had an opportunity to meet with some people who are doing a form of car sharing where you actually take the car on a one-way and you leave it, you drive it, and then you leave it. And you don't have to return to the same location. And I know San Francisco has been engaged in looking at this. I would really appreciate it if the staff might take a look at the opportunities around this kind of riding, ride share. We have you know, we now have Lyft and we have Uber and we have all these other things. We also have these other, I think Mercedes has a new program, but they also have one-way service. I think it's, if we're really concerned about getting people out of their car, we got to get them into another car. And I think this is a wave that, and so there's a lot of legal issues, there's a lot of operational issues, and I think it would be interesting to have a briefing by the staff looking into these things and figuring out how we can better utilize these new trends that are coming.
Thank you very much. With that, we will move on to our consent calendar. Moved by Commissioner Tissier, seconded by Commissioner Cortese. Seconded by Commissioner Cortese. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposition? That motion carries unanimously. Now we will move on to public comment. And I'd like to invite Jane Kramer to come forward, please.
Jane Kramer, issue, establishing an ecologically healthy and self-reliant community continued. Ecological medical diagnosis and treatment of health problems says, stop putting the foods and chemicals that make you sick into your body. A cornerstone of this outlook would be a community clinic staffed by physicians highly trained in and committed to the practice of ecological medicine, who also value the benefits of patient mutual help and who would be independent of conventional medical administrative oversight. The community resources for success already exist, but need to be enhanced and expanded. In particular, one, include alternative approaches to health care and basic medical insurance coverage for everyone. Two, provide opportunities for all to identify and direct both skills, personal and work, and interests into new niches. To this end, support apprenticeships and high-quality two-year community colleges. Some individuals will need temporary financial support in making this transition. Three, develop a local currency economy that intertwines with and secures the benefits of health and education that is not degraded by venture capital speculation and that also makes room for volunteerism and gift-giving that is payback. Four, locally raise the bar for quality clean air in public home and workspaces, including agriculture, using sustainable technology and design. Five, engage neighborhoods in ongoing stakeholder participation in a genuinely transparent policy planning process that they own. Six, support a small regionally funded basic research program that is uncompromisingly focused on how a healthy autoimmune system holistically works in context, not research towards biotech fixes. Accordingly, establish and strictly adhere to such funding rules. And seven, provide enabling policy and legislation for the above. In this, you are the experts. In sum, in this interactive endeavor, individuals take responsibility for their own lifelong adaptive health maintenance and productivity within a vibrant, resilient local economy and community. References attached. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your comments. Our next item is adjournment of the meeting, and I just wanted to note before we adjourn that due to the holidays, the commission meetings in both November and December have been scheduled 1 week earlier than their regularly scheduled time. Therefore, the new dates will be November 19th and December 17th. Also, please note that in order not to conflict with the Bay Area Air Quality Management District meetings, the BATA and commission meetings will be held in the afternoon, starting at 1:30 p.m. on both those dates. So thank you. And
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Just for the record, I know I'm the only member of the SMART Board of Directors that's on this commission, but every year the same things happen. We have the third Wednesday becomes the MTC commission meeting at 1:30 in the afternoon, which is the same time as the SMART Board of Directors meeting. I just ask you to make note of that, and maybe some year we can postpone the or advance the MDC Commission meeting to another date. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. And with that, our meeting is adjourned. Okay. Ready? Okay. Good morning. I'd like to call to order the meeting of the Bay Area Infrastructure Financing Authority, BAIFA, for Wednesday, October 22nd, 2014. Please, first of all, if I may turn to the secretary to confirm that we have a quorum.
We have a quorum.
Thank you very much. Please note that this meeting, as all of our others, is being broadcast on the MTC website. And invite everyone to speak clearly into the microphone so we can record all the comments. We look forward to public comment on any of the items before the authority and would invite you to select one of the blue cards on the table. In addition, all the materials for this meeting are located at that table by the window. So our first item is the consent calendar. Approved by Commissioner Hegarty, seconded by Commissioner Dodd. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposition? That motion carries unanimously. Next item, we will turn to a contract with the Bay Area Managed Lanes Implementation Plan, CDM Smith, for a contract in the amount of $1 million. I'd like to turn to our staff, Ashley Nguyen, for a presentation on that item. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Worth. Good morning, Commissioners. Ashley Nguyen with MTC's Operations Section. Staff is requesting the authority's approval to enter into a contract with CDM Smith to help us prepare the Managed Lanes Implementation Plan. Just by way of background, over the next 18 months, MTC, Caltrans District 4, and the California Highway Patrol will be co-leading the Managed Lanes Implementation Plan effort, which will update and supersede the 2002 HOV Master Plan. So it's been quite a while since we've done this. So we're back at the table, if you will. This plan is much different from the HOV Master Plan because we'll be looking at all three types of managed lanes. We'll be continuing to look at HOV lanes. We'll look at hot lanes or express lanes, and we'll also look into express toll lanes. The purpose of this plan is to really define priority strategies to fully develop a managed lane network for our region, as well as to develop operational policies to help us manage our current system as well as the future ones. So we have a lot of work ahead of us. Just in short, the plan consists of three different components. The first is network development. Again, we'll look at assessing the performance of the existing and planned managed lanes in our region and look at opportunities to, again, fully define the network into the future. The second is we'll look at operational policies. We'll assess violations and propose ways to improve them using a combination of CHP enforcement as well as technology should they be available. And we'll also look at a host of managed lanes policies, such as hours of operations, vehicle occupancy, access restrictions, and other managed lanes to really, again, find ways to better operate and improve the performance of our managed lanes network. And the third is a system enhancement. This is our Columbus Day strategy, if you will. We'll be looking at technology-driven active traffic management strategies to really look at the entire freeway corridor, not just the managed lanes, but how the entire freeway corridor could work in tandem with managed lanes. We will also be looking at regional express bus service as well as park and ride facilities to, again, hopefully boost the managed lanes performance. This plan is not going to be done in a vacuum or in a bubble. It certainly will look and call upon the help of our partner agencies, including the CMAs and transit operators, as well as community and business organizations and members of the public to really help us shape and define this plan. The desired outcome is an implementation plan, and we want to emphasize implementation. We want to certainly develop a set of strategies that we can actually pursue and inform the next Plan Bay Area, as well as just actual implementation over the next few years. So as part of the procurement process, BAIFA issued a request for a proposal. In response, we received five proposals, and an evaluation panel forwarded three firms for interviews. Based on the written proposals as well as the interviews, the evaluation panel unanimously recommended CDM Smith as the team most advantageous to BAFA. CDM Smith offers a strong understanding of the purpose of the project, as well as a sound approach to implementing the work plan. The team has extensive technical and policy skills and experiences, and the project manager is a seasoned pro in this area and has very strong established relationships with a number of the regional stakeholders. I wanted to note before I close that the BAFA today will be approving this contract because we're using ExpressLink capital funds that are managed by BAFA. But staff will be seeking policy direction from MTC's operations committee as well as plan approval from the full commission because of the regional scope of this project and the policy implications of the policies to be defined as part of this plan. It really affects the entire region and not just the counties that we have authority to implement express lanes. So in closing, staff recommends that the authority authorize the executive director or his designee to negotiate and enter into a contract with CDM Smith in an amount not to exceed $1 million. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ashley. Are there any questions? Yes, Commissioner McKenzie.
Yes, just for the record, Jake McKenzie from Sonoma County and the Nine Cities thereof. I'm not a member of this committee, but I am chair of the operations committee. At our last meeting, as those of you who attended will remember, we did talk about our progress in trying to achieve the Columbus Day dream nirvana for all days of the week here in the Bay Area. And so I was very pleased to hear staff talk about the interrelationship of this particular project to the overall work we're doing and the major effort we're going to be putting to come up with an agreement between these aforementioned agencies as we move forward. So I'd just like to thank everybody for that spirit of coordination and cooperation. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Great. Thank you very much, Commissioner McKenzie. Is there any public comment on this item? If not, then may I please have a motion to approve this recommended contract? Made by Commissioner Haggerty, seconded by Commissioner Dodd. Yes. Any further discussion? All in favor? Aye. Any opposition? That motion carries unanimously. The next item, we'll move on to item 4, which is a cooperative agreement for design environmental services and oversight of the final design and right-of-way phase for the I-880 express lanes in Alameda County. So I'd like to turn to staff, please, for a presentation on that item. Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Lisa Klein in the operations section, and I'm pinch hitting for Peter Lee today. This morning, we seek the authority's approval to enter into the cooperative agreement with Caltrans for the design phase of the 880 express lane project. What I want to do, though, before I seek your approval, is take the opportunity to provide an update on the project, and then I'll go into some details on the cooperative agreement. Unfortunately, we have some technical difficulties this morning. I'm not able to project the slides, but if you turn to your packet following the memo, there are some graphic illustrations, which would be good to follow along. The 880 project will convert HOV lanes to express lanes. In the northbound direction, the project starts at Dixon Landing Road and runs up to just about Llewellyn Boulevard. And in the southbound direction, the project starts at Hagenberger, at the Oakland Airport, and runs down to Dixon Landing Road. And the project does include a portion of an HOV lane that's actually under construction today and is scheduled to open at the end of 2015 at the very northern end of that corridor. The if you want to turn to the photo, it illustrates very well, I think, the challenges in the 880 corridor today. It's a very constrained geometry. There are limited shoulders in many locations, and in some places, no additional available right-of-way. And it's also a very congested corridor, and the HOV lanes themselves are slow in places. And technically, they are degraded by federal performance standards. The speeds are so slow, they don't actually meet federal standards. There are probably a few contributing factors to this. I mean, certainly they're well-used lanes when you consider the number of carpools, the number of clean air vehicles, and likely some violators as well. But interestingly, the analysis shows that one of the key reasons for the slow speeds in the HOV lane is weaving, as drivers try to get out of the HOV lanes and get over to exit the freeway, and particularly at major interchanges like Route 92, 84, and Mission Boulevard. So what this does is it slows down the speeds in the HOV lane and makes the lane appear more crowded. So what this means is that the project, in addition to making it work as an express lane, really does need to kind of take on some existing mobility challenges in the corridor. Our goal, you may remember, has been to try to retain the open access or continuous access design we have on today's HOV lanes. But given that we have to manage this weaving in the 880 corridor, we are looking at some modifications, some restrictions at strategic locations, and these are really necessary to improve the HOV travel time and the reliability. So what we're going to do is use some buffers. These are solid double-striped lines, which are illegal to cross. And I do want to mention that 880 is not unique in this respect, and it's actually similar to what's evolved as the design on the I-580 corridor, where the Alameda County Transportation Commission is implementing an express lane. They have a great deal of open access, but there are places approaching the 680 interchange where they are restricting access, again, to manage the weaving. What we're going to end up with, if you turn to image four, is a blend of open and restricted access on the 880 corridor. On the map, the green area shows areas of open access where everyone can get in and out, and that's most of the corridor. The red areas are those where movement would be prohibited, no in or out, and the blue would be either enter or exit only. We have had some detailed discussions with staff from the Alameda County Transportation Commission, the county, and AC Transit about the design. We did make some modest adjustments in the design based on those discussions.
Lisa?
Yeah.
Excuse me.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to be leaving. Okay. You have sold me. I'll make a motion to approve. And I apologize, Lisa, with all due respect, but we need to have a quorum, and I just think this is very important project, and we ought to move on it, so I'll move it.
Okay, great. Move by Commissioner Dodd and second by Commissioner Hagerty. Is there any public comment on this item? Okay, with that, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposition? That motion carries unanimously. Thank you, Lisa, for that excellent presentation. And I think it's a reflection of our really hard work that the staff.
Thank you for that excellent presentation, and it's a hard work that the staff has done in working particularly closely with Caltrans to come up with this process. So thank you. Thank you very much. With that, we will move on to public comment. I have no speaker cards, and I would like to now adjourn the meeting to our next meeting, which will be Wednesday, November 19th, 2014, in the afternoon. So thank you very much to everyone.